It's time to wake to sleep with Sleep Science Today, where we learn to sleep well with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio.
Welcome to Sleep Science Today. I'm your host, Andrew Kolsky. On this show, we talk about sleep and the science behind sleep, and we learn a lot of interesting facts that you probably didn't know, and I certainly didn't know. So today, we have author Jennifer Adams, who is going to be talking with us about her book, Sleep Divorce, How to Sleep Apart, Not Fall Apart. Jennifer, welcome.
Hello, Andrew. Thanks so much for having me on.
We're glad to have you. This is a topic that we have not covered yet on this show, so I'm sure we're going to have a lot to talk about and a lot to cover. So first off, why don't you give us the benefit of your background and what got you to the point that you wrote a book about sleep divorce?
Yeah, thanks. Well, my husband and I, well, now husband, wasn't my husband, my boyfriend moved in together fairly early in our relationship. And he moved into my house, so he brought all of his furniture, and there was a spare room at the house, so he just put all his bedroom furniture in there. But as most couples do, you just go and you sleep in the same bed, because that's what we're told, that that's what couples do. So we did that, and in all honesty, we lasted 1 week. Fraser, who is my darling husband, he quite an accomplished snorer. And he hadn't been in a relationship for a couple of years, and we were to go on find out that he had sleep apnea. So he hadn't had anyone monitoring the noise that he was making. I also hadn't been in a relationship for a couple of years, so I'd become a bit of a light sleeper as well. So really bad combination, and honestly, after a week, we were both exhausted and not functioning very well, and just happened to be two people who needed our sleep. So we thought, what can we do? Well, let's sleep separately during the week and we'll come together again on the weekends. That lasted about 3 or 4 weeks, and then we just exhausted on the weekends. But we made the decision pretty quickly that we were going to sleep in separate bedrooms. The configuration of my house were that the bedrooms are right next to each other. And I think that was a contributing factor that made it a little bit easy for us, because we didn't feel like we were being overly separated in the house. We were just one wall apart. And we were still going into each other's beds at the beginning of the evening. If someone would wake up in the morning, you'd go into the other's bedroom. So we were really just using our beds for sleeping, which is, you know, as you know, that's what we're supposed to do. So the impact on our relationship wasn't that significant. I did cry a little bit. It was a little bit sad because, you know, you just think we're moving in together. This is what we do. This is what he had done in previous relationships and I had done. But anyway, it wasn't working for us, and we were in a position where we could talk about it. And we knew that we were heading to separate rooms for the right reason, and that was to get sleep. At that point, Fraser was a ceramic tiler, so he was getting up really early in the morning. And he had physical work all day. I was teaching, and, you know, I needed to be on my A game every day. And so that was just a decision that worked well for us. I then started to talk about it. I'm a fairly open person, and I started to tell people that we'd moved into separate rooms. There were really three responses. The first one, which people still receive to this day, is there's obviously something wrong with your relationship because you're not sharing a bed. I knew that there wasn't, so it kind of didn't bother me because it was, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong. The second common response were people who would kind of lean in a bit close and say, wow, how do you do that? Like, I would love to have my own room. My husband or my wife keeps me awake all night. Like, you know, how did you make this happen? So there's curiosity about how they would like to do it. And the third one were the people who were doing it and were being really secretive about it. And there was one particular colleague at the time, and she spoke to me a few times. Her and her husband had been sleeping separately for 12 years and had not told a soul, to the point that his bedroom was actually set up to look like she was using his bedroom. So that when people came over, so she had some clothes in the wardrobe, she had some cosmetics in the ensuite, and she was very secretive. And we had quite a few conversations. She was interested in how I broached the subject with people. And she was one said to me, you should write a book about this because there are so many people out there who don't even know it's an option. And I guess as I spoke more about it, I started to get a little bit, people should be able to do this. Like, you know, I'm doing it. I know that other people are doing it. But there was still this very big reaction when I shared it. And I got a publishing deal in Australia, and I wrote an article for a women's media site over in Australia, and it was, just about my experience with my husband. It got over 400 comments in a really short space of time, and I got 7 radio interviews.
Oh, wow.
I hadn't done an interview before, and it was just amazing, the response to it, and I think it, and it's just really grown since then. Because people are starting to understand the importance of sleep, which we will talk about, as we go through our chat today. So for me, I've really taken on board, if I can be out there, if I can be a voice in this conversation, to help people understand that choosing where you sleep is a practical and pragmatic decision. What happens is society overloads it with emotion and with social stigma and with all sorts of meanings to the sleep that I think have to be separated, and helping people to understand that you're not rejecting your partner, you're making a really great decision that is going to actually help your relationship. People need to come up in all aspects of their relationship with a solution that works for them, whether it's sleeping together, sleeping separately, living together, living apart, what works for you. That's kind of how I've ended up where I am here. And the book, the current book, Sleep Divorce, that's actually the second edition of the book, which I did in a collaboration with Dr. Neil Stanley, who is a British sleep scientist. And so Neil and I met, we met on a chat on HuffPost one time about separate sleeping, and he and I have come together, and he's added the science in behind the practical part. My book, the initial one, was written based on over 100 interviews with couples, so it was more of a qualitative research base, and Neil has brought the quantitative in there.
Wow. So there's been a lot of work put into this, and then you are writing from a position of knowledge because you're actually living it. So, all right, then I got to go back to, I think I'll call it an obvious question, which is, where did this concept come from in the first place? That people just automatically assume that you sleep together. But has it always been that way? Where did that start?
No, it hasn't. It's very much been reflective of how accommodation has developed. And it is particularly a Western culture phenomena. Other cultures, certainly Eastern and Western cultures, are far more practical. You read a lot about Japanese families who have a lot of shared sleeping, and it's the same in a lot of African cultures. It's about the sleep. So from a Western culture perspective, we all grew up in this kind of agricultural part of our growth, that where there were landowners and there were people who worked for the landowner, and there was a lot of communal sleeping, in England, where you worked, you came in, you slept with the group of people you worked with, and there were beds that were set aside privately if couples wanted to go and have sex, but that was separated from the sleeping. Come the Industrial Revolution, we all started to come into cities. We started to have smaller individual accommodation. We started to have rooms where we slept either with a partner or if you had children. But this notion of coming in and sleeping in these smaller spaces then started to appear in our media. And so we started to have images of what a bedroom for a husband and wife would look like. And then when television started, we started to see couples on television. The first couple that was shown actually in beds was Mary Kay and Johnny Stearns, which is American. They were in a sitcom. There were some early images, I Love Lucy, but feet were always on the floor. There was they were in twin beds. So the first couple that was actually shown in a double bed with their feet off the floor was Fred and Wilma Flintstone.
Yeah.
They were the first actual couple to be shown. They were in their, you know, cave people outfits, but they were right. in bed with their feet off the floor. So media has continued to show this notion, happy couples sleep in a bed together. I don't know if you're familiar with Albert Bandura, a social theorist, and he came up with the social learning theory. And social learning theory is that we imitate the behaviour that we see. So when we have a media that is just constantly showing couples get and they share beds, I have not come across, and I would love if any listeners can email me or get in touch, there's no movie that shows a couple happily sleeping separately. There was a movie, Hope Springs, with Meryl Streep and Tommy Lee Jones that came out actually just as my book was about to be published. And they start off with a couple in separate rooms, but immediately, you know, there's trouble in the relationship. So, you know, and that was it. And it recently came up actually in an episode of And Just Like That. I don't know if you're familiar. It's the Sex and the City reboot or, you know, follow on where they've all grown up a little more. And there's a couple there where the husband takes himself off to a separate bed because the wife is sleep talking. He can't sleep. He's got work to do. He goes to the spare room. She says, "Where were you last night?" He said, "I was in the spare room." And her response is, "We are not that couple." You know, because she said, "You know, that's called a sleep divorce. We are not that couple." And I just thought, oh, I was so disappointed. Thought, you know, a show like that could have embraced it, because they're actually embracing one of their couples. Sarah Jessica Parker is actually living separately from her partner, and they're doing quite a nice job of that. So anyway, with all of these messages around, this is why people think that it's the only option. And it is the two messages really clearly. Happy couples sleep together, unhappy couples don't. And that's sort of part of the problem. It's a double whammy. So if you do sleep separately and you say to your friends this immediate response of, oh, you know, what's gone wrong in the relationship that you have to, because we think you've had a fight and that's why you've gone to separate rooms. So this social proof that is out there is simply that you have to sleep together. And I think it's gone on for so long, and so many people conflate that emotion of being together with sleeping. The other really big conflation that we have is our language, because when you start seeing someone, instead of saying, "Are you having sex yet?" what do we say? "Are you sleeping
together?" "Are you sleeping together?"
Yeah, are you sleeping together? So we have this euphemism that again confuses sleep from sex, you know, in a bed. So we get all these messages, and so I think it has a really bad impact on people saying, "Hey, I can't sleep with you. I love you, and we have so much fun together with everything else, but our bed behaviours aren't matching. So how do we address that?" And the consequences of sleep deprivation are so bad that, you know, this is why I love this conversation. I love the topic because it's good for people to learn that there are options.
Wow, that's wonderful. So, you know, I have a question, and I'm going to ask you the question, but then we got to take a quick commercial break and we'll come back for the answer. But does anybody know where the term sleep divorce originated? I'd love to know that. I don't know. But hold on.
Andrew,
let's take a quick commercial. Well, let's take a commercial break. We'll come back and talk about it. So we will be right back on Sleep Science Today. If you're having trouble sleeping and you need support, don't go it alone. Join us at our free online support group at sleepsupportgroup.com. Just put in your email address, sign up for the list, and you will be notified of all of our upcoming meetings. It's free, so why not try it out?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Apples and pears, beef and skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Dec, fish and chips, mum and dad,
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we're back on Sleep Science Today. We're talking with Jennifer Adams, author of a book about sleep divorce. And I have posed the question of where the name sleep divorce came from. No clues?
No, it's actually good. You're going to send me off on a bit of an internet search after we finish here. I know that it's a good clickbait because it's dramatic. I'm not actually a fan of it, even though the book is called Sleep Divorce. Neil and I, my co-author, just decided it was one of those things we couldn't fight. I actually was a little bit of a keyboard warrior for a while when I saw Sleep Divorce coming out, because of course that the notion of divorce, you know, so it is dramatic. It's the marriage is ending. Over time, it has become a little less sort of barbed with it. I would prefer separate sleeping, independent sleeping arrangements, a sleep separation, a sleep retreat. These are all words that people have. However, sleep divorce seems to have stuck. So, you know, if we can get the message out, then I'm happy to keep using it. But if I find out where it is, I'm going to email you.
Yes, I'd love to know, because I've touched on the subject in some articles here and there, and I always put in that I prefer to use the term individual sleeping plan because of the negative connotation of sleep divorce. And then we say, so people automatically assume that if you're sleeping in different beds and you have the sleep divorce, that must mean that there's problems in the relationship, but it doesn't. So the terminology, unfortunately, gives it a bad rap sometimes.
I agree with you. Definitely agree. One thing that has happened over the last few years is a lot more celebrities are coming out in favour of it. Cameron Diaz, God bless her, she came out last year quite strongly and said that separate sleeping or couples sleeping separately needs to be normalised. That got a lot of media, so I was pretty happy about that. Now we have Victoria and David Beckham. They have separate sort of sleeping quarters or living quarters in their house. Sarah Jessica Parker, Matthew Broderick. Of course, the royal family, Gwyneth Paltrow and Brad Falchuk, they have this separate sleeping arrangement. So I think as more and more celebrities are coming out and saying, hey, this is a good thing to do, that's helping to change that narrative a little bit. I mean, royalty has been doing it forever. And generally it tends to be the more money you have, the more options you have, and the more people tend to sleep separately. So, you know, being stuck in the shed with everyone else, unfortunately, was the domain of the people who weren't quite as wealthy.
Right. Well, I can see that. I mean, today, if you've got a one-bedroom apartment, you've got one bedroom. There's really not too many choices. So, you know,
That's where sofa beds come in, Andrew.
Ah, yes, yes. Well, then, so I'd love to hear then a little bit about, let's talk about what are some reasons that people might choose to sleep separately. What types of things come up on a regular basis?
The number one issue is snoring. Unfortunately, as I'm sure you are well versed in this, so as we age, we all tend to snore. I've certainly started snoring. So my husband, I mentioned earlier, he was diagnosed with sleep apnea, so he now has a CPAP. So he only snores a little bit, so he's actually the quieter one of the two of us now. So on the occasions when we do have to share a bedroom, I'm the one who sometimes is waking him up with my snoring, which is kind of ironic given the beginning of our journey. But there are all sorts of things that can happen when you co-sleep with someone. I mean, there is the snoring, there's other sorts of noises, there's temperature differences, there are movement in bed as people get older and they need to get up and down out of bed more. There's different times that people want to get to bed. Our devices have become divisive in the bedroom. And so, you know, in the book, I cover off on all of the things that can happen. So it's actually, it's almost a bit of a minefield when you start looking at it, the sorts of reasons why people may not be sleep compatible, yet we just think we're going to be. You know, it's not a very sexy conversation early in a relationship saying to someone, you know, so what time do you know, are you a lark or an owl? You know, what temperature do you like the bedroom? One of my earliest issues I had with a boyfriend was that he wanted the room at 19 degrees every night and I was freezing. But that was the temperature that he wanted to sleep at, you know, irrespective of what time of year it was. He would have that. So, and again, in the book, came up with a whole range of reasons. I had one lady whose husband insisted on eating chocolate ice cream in the bed nearly every night, and she got tired of cleaning the sheets with the chocolate ice cream. So, it's a there are a whole range of issues and a whole range of things that can. But what it leads to is your sleep can be disturbed by your partner. And that then leads to sleep deprivation, which an area which I'm sure you are very, very, very knowledgeable in. But it's I don't think people appreciate the sleep deprivation. I think is often just associated with sleep apnea, with insomnia, with restless legs, with all of the more pathological issues that people have with sleeping. It's not as easily and immediately associated with a disruptive partner. Because again, we come back to that socialization that we're just sort of taught that we have to put up with it. And one and two nights, you know, a month, a year, whatever, that's fine. But when it's happening repeatedly and people's sleep cycles are constantly being interrupted, that's when you start to expose yourself, or if you're the person creating the disruption, you're exposing your partner to issues around, you know, a broken sleep cycle consistently. If I can, you know, and my technical knowledge is going to be nowhere near what yours is, Andrew, but, you know, when we go through the stages of the sleep cycle, you know, N2 and N3 are just so incredibly important to help us with our, you know, our brain function, with our memory, especially N3, with all of the repair that happens in our brain and in our bodies. It's not completely out of the realms to imagine that there would be someone who potentially is having their N3 sleep broken every night by a disruptive partner. Now, if you are doing that night after night after night, you are exposing yourself to enormous health risks, you know, because you are not getting that repair that happens. And a few people I've spoken to, they think, oh, well, if I get woken up, I'll just fall back to sleep and just go back into my N3. And it's like, well, no, you don't. Like, once you're out, you're out. You've got to start again. You know, and then that whole balance of the N3 getting a bit shorter as you go through the night and getting into REM and all of the goodness and that comes, you know, we all know how refreshed and wonderful we feel when we've had a great night's sleep. And equally how awful we feel when we've had, you know, we haven't had all that we know. So sleep is such an active part of the day. And again, that is something that people, thankfully, more and more are learning. I saw a stat the other day, 43% of Gen Zs, or Gen Zs, however you want to say it, 43% are now saying that they'd prefer to sleep alone to get a good night's sleep. So that message for them is, you know, sleep, diet and exercise, they're the three pillars and they're really important. Right. And they are prioritizing sleep. And, you know, my message for everyone is you know, everyone needs to be prioritizing sleep. So we have these stats of sort of around about 30% of couples, you know, saying that they sleep separately. I'd say it's probably more. And, you know, what it should simply be is the stat should be where it is so that people are getting, you know, good sleep. Also the fact that, you know, having that broken sleep, and I did listen to a couple of your earlier podcasts, and you've talked about this, the in the N3 stage sleep where the brain cleans itself of the plaques, so that beta amyloid, you know, and that relationship there to, you know, triggering, and I'm not a big expert on it, but it, you know, triggers the tau, is it tau pathology that can lead
tau
to that
tangles.
Inflammation? Yeah, the tau tangles, which can be a precursor to Alzheimer's. So, you know, if you're exposing yourself or your partner to this, and that's a really hidden one, because we all know about heart disease and diabetes and what it does to mood and irritability and all of those, you know, after a bad night's sleep, we crave sugar, we crave carb, we crave all of those things that give us that immediate boost that we didn't get overnight when our body repaired itself. But that Alzheimer's, when I wrote the first book, that was kind of early in the research, and now that they're showing that that's important, you just think, you know, everyone should know that. Should be on the back of cereal packets. so that people understand, you know, that you're not actually doing your partner any favours by, you know, neither of you are, by not being that best version and not giving yourself the best chance you have at getting a really good night's sleep.
Right.
That's where my passion lies with this.
Well, you know, as you were talking about that, a question came to my mind, which was, so if you... You said you interviewed about 100 different couples for your first book, right?
Yeah.
Was there any discussion about, like, is there something that people get when sleeping together that they might be missing if they're sleeping apart?
There is definitely the intimacy of sleeping next to a person. But I think it all comes in that balancing of what's important. And it's a very personal decision. And look, if couples want to sleep together and they want to do this irrespective of disruption, then, you know, you do you. My big thing is you do you. But the simply saying, and again, this was, and there was actually two women that I interviewed whose marriages ended because they wanted to sleep separately. So their husband divorced them because they said, You will sleep next to me. A husband and wife sleep, and I need you next to me. I need you next to me to feel safe and to feel secure. And these women were suffering quite significant health issues because their husbands, both of them, were really big snorers. And that was where sort of that path went. So I would suggest to any couple, I get the intimacy, and I love it. Like my husband and I, you know, if we're, one of us will wake up and we go through and we lie in bed next to each other, and it is lovely. It is lovely next to be next to each other. And the times when we do have to share a room when we're traveling, there is part of it that we like because we can lie there and can chat. But we can do all of that in having our separate, you know, bed as well. So it's, is it a sacrifice? I think it's more of a compromise. It's, I love that. But the cost of that is so high that, you know, maybe we don't do it. And maybe that's where the sometimes separate sleeping comes in. So if you love snuggling next to your partner, you love waking up to them, you love waking up, you know, during the night, do it. But do it in balance with keeping yourself healthy. If you want to sacrifice, you go for it, you know, and God bless to you and all, you know, and I hope it goes well. But do it with knowledge, do it with understanding, would be my
right.
message.
Well, I think that, you know, the sort of the social stigma that you were talking about before, that concept of sleeping apart must mean there's something wrong in the marriage. I think that message resonates with a lot of people from this standpoint. If I'm talking with a client, perhaps, that is sleeping with a partner. The partner is snoring. The client can't sleep because of the snoring. You know, they will talk about, well, I don't want to sleep in a different bed. That shows that, you know, my relationship is bad. And they'll try earplugs, or they'll try whatever. Or maybe, hopefully, they have the partner who's snoring be checked out to make sure it's not sleep apnea and address that. But, you know, it's hard for some people to accept that it's okay if they sleep in a different place. So I guess that leads me to the bigger question of, if you are someone in a relationship where you feel that it's really hard for you to get restful sleep because something is going on, whether it be snoring or timing or lighting or whatever it may be, chocolate ice cream, you know, how does someone appropriately and delicately approach that question and deal with it? But before you answer that one, it's time for our second commercial break. We'll come back and we'll answer that question. Have you ever wondered why you can't sleep well? Well, there could be lots of different reasons. In order to figure it out, I wrote the book, Why Can't I Sleep Well? It includes 150 common sleep questions that are asked and answered, and I provide all of the supporting science and evidence to address each of the questions. I encourage you to get a copy of Why Can't I Sleep Well by Andrew Kolsky. It's available at www.sleepsciencetoday.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list? Then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
Cappuccino, latte, Americano, flat white, macchiato.
Just imagine, for less than the price of a single cup of coffee out on the high street, you could enjoy an award-winning online magazine every month with up-to-the-minute information on health and healthy lifestyle. Sounds like a good trade-off? Check out Health Triangle magazine on the UKHealthRadio.com website. Just sacrifice a single cup of coffee every month.
Let's all put health first.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, we are back on Sleep Science Today. We're talking with Jennifer Adams, author of a book about sleep divorce. And we were just talking about, how do you bring up the subject if you're having trouble sleeping with a bed partner?
Number one, absolutely number one thing is make sure you are doing this for the right reasons. You need to be looking at sleeping separately because it's to do with your health and it's to do with taking care of yourself and your relationship. If you are wanting to go to a separate room because you do want to get away from your partner, go and get a different book because it's not my book. So just be really clear about that, because if you do have a partner, as you were saying, who loves that closeness, loves that intimacy, loves being in bed, more than likely they're going to feel a level of rejection around what you're doing. Certainly, again, go through in a lot of detail in the book about how you can approach it. Don't do it when you're tired. Don't do it after a night where they have kept you awake and kind of what you want to do is yell and scream at them and maybe sort of put your hands around their throat. Do it at a time when you are rested and you're in, and you know your partner. You know when they're really receptive to listening. You know when they are going to feel at their best and you're going to feel at your best. And also appreciate sometimes it might be an extended conversation. It might be a conversation that goes over a week or a couple of weeks or, you know, even a couple of months. Letting them know that you still love them, You still want to be intimate with them. If it's important, you still want to have sex with them. Talk about what the solutions are going to look like. Fraser and I went through this and we were like, well, how do we keep our connection? How do we keep our physical connection? We were so early in our relationship, you know, to be honest, having sex and wanting to have sex with each other wasn't a problem. So it just sort of was a non-issue for us. But we talked about what can we do to have that intimacy. And I read a great quote, you know, intimacy happens in a million moments every day, depending on how you want to do that with your partner. And that's really what it is. So the things that Fraser and I do, he normally goes to bed first. He's a lark, I'm an owl. That's another one of our issues that, you know, became apparent. I will always make sure I go through. He'll give me a kiss goodnight when he leaves, you know, whatever I'm doing. But I'll always know that he's up for half an hour or so. So I go through and I give him another kiss goodnight. We might have a chat about stuff and I lie in his bed. When he wakes up in the morning, and this is one of our rituals that has changed, the first thing he used to do was come through and give me a kiss. And we agreed, even if I was asleep, he would give me a kiss good morning. All that's changed is he now gets up and he gets dressed and he gets showered and then he comes through and gives me a kiss. So that's the change that we have made. Our bedrooms, nothing is off, you know, off limits to each other. We, you know, we have complete free access to each other. If I want to go and lie in his bed and talk to him, etc., I'll go through. And we still do that thing. We wake up in the morning and one of us will just get up and go through to the other one's bed. So we've maintained that. There were some wonderful stories that I captured. I had a couple, one of my favourites that stick with me, is they sat down every night and they had a glass of hot milk together. And they would sit at the kitchen table, and you know yourself how good a glass of warm milk is before you go to bed. And that was their little ritual. And they would sit there and have their warm milk every night and talk about what happened during the day and what was happening the next day. And that was how they, you know, kept their connection together. And again, lots of stories from people about what they did. So put all of those things in place. You know, you'll be able to gauge how your partner is feeling about this suggestion. As I said, talk about, you know, the wading pool. Is there something you can change? Do some sometimes separate sleeping if that's going to help. You know, just maybe diving in and saying, I can't bear to be with you anymore in bed at night is not going to be the best opening line. So think really carefully and be sensitive and let them know that you still love them. You still want to be with them. You just have to manage this part. Maybe it's a bit similar to if one of you wants to try a different diet or start eating a different food, or you're going to get up in the morning and go exercising. It's, you know, it's one of your big pillars of health. So frame it in a way that you're both going to win out of this. My best advice.
Mm-hmm. So what do you say to the person who says, well, I'm afraid to raise the topic because I'm afraid that that's going to interfere with sort of spontaneous intimacy because we'll be in two different rooms. I don't want to mess up my relationship.
Yeah. Again, a really common topic. I had about three couples that I interviewed that over the time they had slept separately for a really long time, they'd all had multiple children in that time. So they're sort of living proof that it doesn't interfere with your sex life. Again, it's about agreeing how it's going to work, Andrew. So, you know, couples would say, well, you know, what happens if I wake up at 2 a.m. and, you know, I feel like, you know, it's like, well, come through to the room, you know. Again, talk about how it's going to work. You're not going to get it right in the beginning, but just keep that conversation and agree. Sleep deprivation affects your libido. Again, repeated from couples all over the media, from my interviews, and always people report that when they are well rested, they feel like having sex with their partner more because, you know, of all of the things that come along with that. So it will probably improve your sex life, to be honest. Another great story that I had was an old lady. I was being interviewed on the radio in Australia, and she called in, and she was 72. And her husband had been sleeping separately for, you know, a couple of decades. She had a bell, and she rang the bell when she wanted him to come into her room so that they could have sex. And I just love that. So, you know, they were happy, they were healthy, and, yep, she'd ring the bell. She said, I'd ring the bell when my husband knew that I wanted to have relations with him. And so he'd hop out of bed. He was probably waiting for the bell. but that's how they did it. You know, when you start dating your partner, you're not living together, but you still manage to have sex. You know, so take yourself sort of back to those times where, you know, if the only reason you're having sex is because you find each other in bed with each other, you know, maybe this could help spice up your sex life. This could help, remind you. And as I said, who wants to be intimate with someone who's just kind of robbed you of hours of sleep overnight? I can almost guarantee you it's not the most attractive, feature to have someone who's stolen the doona, you know, maybe farted a few times during the night, you know, all the things that have interfered with your ability to lead a good life. So give it a go and see if it actually makes an improvement, because I'd suggest that it probably will.
Great. So, you know, you've probably covered some of this kind of peppered throughout the conversation, but let me ask about it all in one place here, which is, so if you come to that decision, or you and your bed partner come to that decision that you're going to try sleeping apart, are there some specific things that you should make sure you talk about, specific tips that you have to make sure that they get it right?
How are you going to keep your connection? That's really important. So what are you going to do so that when you lose that lying next to each other, what's that going to be replaced with? And get creative, get really specific about it, and know that it's going to change. As I explained about what Fraser and I have done over the years, it's going to change as you grow. You've got to keep talking about it. But again, it depends what sort of a couple you are. Some couples kind of fall into bed and don't talk to each other. That's not part of how their communication pattern works. I think we have this a little bit of a romantic notion that couples are snuggling in bed every night and they're chatting through their problems, they're planning their life, they're, you know, holding hands, they're falling into some intimacy. It's not really the way it works, every night. You know, someone's gone to bed and they've fallen asleep first, and then the other person comes in, and that could be a repeated pattern. Again, that's why my recurring message is you've got to do you. You've got to come up with the relationship parameters and, you know, what it is that makes you a happy and healthy couple. Now, as I say, if you sleep well, you feel well, and if you feel well, you function well. And it's that function part, because you don't only have a relationship with your partner, you have a relationship with everyone else that you encounter every day. And personally, I think you have a responsibility to kind of bring your best self as many times as you can. We all have our off days and we all have nights when we don't sleep for all sorts of reasons. But if it's something that you can have control over and something you can negotiate with your partner, you can talk to them. It may even be that you have kids as well and they need to be part of the conversation, because they might, again, reported, mummy and daddy aren't sleeping in the same bed, and they might say that to their friends, and their friends are going, oh, your parents are breaking up. So have that as part of the conversation too, if need be. Family, friends, everyone. I would love everyone to be talking about, sleeping for this, is sleeping. I would love this to be a non-topic, to be honest, that, we don't have to talk about couples sleeping separately. What we're talking about is going, yay, you have made some amazing decisions so that you sleep well every night, so that you can be happy and healthy. That's my nirvana, is that nobody wants to talk to me anymore and no one needs to buy the book. But certainly just keep that conversation up and keep reassuring them, extra hugs, extra kisses, and hopefully that's going to see you through.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. So
and any of that make sense to you?
it does. And, what I'm getting from this is, obviously, there's no shame in wanting or deciding to sleep separately. It's a healthy thing. It gives each partner the ability to get that restful sleep that they need so that they can indeed function their best. So, it's only good things. And quite honestly, if you're asleep, whether you're sleeping in the same bed or not, you're asleep. So it's really not, that big of a difference. But my last question to you then would be, because of that, because of this stigma that we've talked about, because of what other people might say, you have a chapter in your book that's titled, What Will the Neighbors Think? What's your best advice for couples who are dealing with that situation?
Time is the best thing. Fraser and I had that, and you know, 20 years on, I think we've convinced everyone that we're okay. So certainly just kind of let it play out. I think there's two things. Some people, like the colleague I spoke about at the beginning, if you don't feel comfortable talking about it, you don't have to. You know, you have the right to keep these matters to, you know, to yourself privately. Maybe that's the period when you're working it out and you're trying to kind of just work through those emotions and those feelings with your partner. You may choose never to tell anyone, and that's absolutely okay. But I think talking about the separate sleeping from the health perspective, you know, it's not like, oh, you know, Bill kept me up again last night, he's snoring, I can't take it anymore. You know, the emotion part, try and take the emotion out and just say, hey, Bill and I have just decided that we're going to head to separate bedrooms a few nights a week because, you know, I'm snoring a lot and it's keeping him up and we're not functioning as well as we could. So, you know, if, you know, and to bring it up in just in that kind of calm, very practical, pragmatic, you know, it's, I always say that it's about sleeping. So reassure people. If you want to talk about it, speak about it with confidence. Yeah, I go into all the, you know, I said all of the different people that I spoke to about it over the time. I'm probably a little bit different because I was like out there championing the cause. And so do what feels comfortable for you, that you feel comfortable talking about. But certainly do it with confidence and do it because you know you're making a really good decision. It's a bit like saying, I've started doing Pilates, you know, we're going to Pilates together because, you know, we care about our health. We're changing our diet. We've gone to the Mediterranean diet now, you know, to help with our cholesterol and all of these things. So you can probably say those with comfort. So it's then saying, well, we've actually decided to sleep in separate rooms some nights or every night so that we can get a good night's sleep. So let's hope that we can move everyone along that that continuum.
Well, fantastic. I think, you know, this information and just this discussion helps people hopefully get more comfortable with the concept and set themselves up for better sleep. Now, I want to make sure before we wrap up the show here, do you have a copy of the book that you can show us on the screen?
I do, so, yes.
So some of you are listening on the radio, but I'm going to read to you. The title is Sleep Divorce, How to Sleep Apart, Not Fall Apart. And where can people buy the book if they want to buy the book?
Probably the best place is Amazon. So it's on Amazon or from the publisher's site, which is in the UK. They're called Troubadour. So if you go to the Troubadour site, it's there or on Amazon. It is full of really practical advice and then lots of backed up with science from Dr. Stanley. And he loves his, he's one of the sort of preeminent sleep scientists over in the UK. So he's got lots in there. He's got lots of appendices for people who really want to dig into to that science part. And I bring to it the very practical, this is how you do it. These are the conversations you have. These are the things you should be thinking about. So, you know, I'd certainly, if any listeners are struggling and thinking if it's for them, yeah, get out, buy a copy, and hopefully it's going to help you.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, that's all the time we have today. So I want to remind our listeners that if you want to keep up with what we're doing here on Sleep Science Today, just go to sleepsciencetoday.com. You can sign up to join our newsletter list and we'll keep you informed of things that are happening. Also, if you happen to be someone with a sleeping problem and you're looking for others to speak with, you can go to sleepsupportgroup.com, and we offer a free online sleep support group. Right now, it's once a month. That may change as we go forward, but that's something available to you at no cost. So, Jennifer Adams, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the conversation, and I encourage you to check out her book, Sleep Divorce, How to Sleep Apart, Not Fall Apart.
Thanks so much, Andrew.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to Sleep Science Today and learning how to sleep better with your host, Andrew Kolsky, on UK Health Radio. For more information on how you can achieve better sleep, go to sleepsciencetoday.com. Remember, Sleep Science Today and sleep better tonight.